This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you'd like to talk with Zorba, call this number, 1-800-462-7413. And along with your call, Zorba, what are our topics this time?
Yes, burnout among medical students. What does that say for the future doctors of America and your medical care? And then we'll talk about food allergies. Do they make you a target for bullies in school? Some shocking evidence of what bullies are doing to kids with peanut allergies.
That's a weird connection. We'll talk more about it. And what's our recipe?
Crispy apple crumble, perfect for this time of year if you like apples. And I love apples and I love crumble.
Nobody ever has made apple crisp as well as my mother used to make
it. As your mother. God bless her.
May
she rest
good,
in peace.
But it's not going to be great.
It's not mom's.
800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I have a real problem clearing my ears. So, for example, when I take off in a plane or land, I'm unable to manually clear it. I have to wait until my body just somehow does it for me, and it's pretty painful.
What do you try to do to clear your ears?
Oh, gosh. Chew gum. I swallow many times. I do the whole hold your nose and blow.
None of that works?
Tactic.
Boy, holding the nose and blowing always works for me.
I know. That's what everyone tells me. Unfortunately, it doesn't work for me. So.
That's right. You're one of the me's that it doesn't work for versus the me's that it does work for. So have you taken any medications for this at all?
No, nothing.
No? Okay. Do you have allergies? Any allergies?
I have no allergies. No. I'm one of those lucky people.
No allergies, which is great. You don't smoke cigarettes, obviously, because you're a public radio listener. No one who listens to public radio ever smokes cigarettes, right, Thomas Smiling?
That's exactly you're right.
Or pipe.
You're getting cussing right now a few of our listeners.
But that can be it. So allergies can be an issue. Smoking can be an issue. But this is due to something called eustachian tube dysfunction. We have this little bitty canal, which is between the nose and the ears. And when you blow your nose and your ears pop, what you're doing is increasing the pressure in that canal, which is called a ventilation canal. And that's so the middle ear is basically the same pressure on one side of the eardrum as the other ear. In other words, that's why the canal exists. And your canal collapses, pulls in the eardrum, and that's where the discomfort is. So I have a suggestion for you. I suggest that you take Sudafed before you go on the airplane. And Sudafed works probably 90% of the time. Over-the-counter Sudafed, 30 to 60 milligrams, 1 to 2 hours before you go on the flight, generally will help open up that eustachian tube. You may still have to blow your nose, but Sudafed is a dynamite over-the-counter medication that tends to work. So
okay. That's
what I would recommend. And if that fails, I would add Sudafed with a steroid nasal spray. That's a prescription spray. You have to get it from your doctor. And you would start the prescription spray 1 or 2 days before you're going on the airplane because that will reduce any possible inflammation in the canal. Generally, the Sudafed works, but the Sudafed and the steroid spray, dynamite, it's got a good chance. It'll do what you want to do.
Awesome. Now, will this work if I wanted to try, say, scuba diving?
Oh, I think I would try that. Yeah, scuba divers have their own issues on how to clear their throat and their nose. But frankly, there's no reason why it shouldn't work for scuba diving because you're dealing with the same thing. You're dealing with pressure. Are you thinking of scuba diving or are you a scuba diver?
Yes.
You're
yes,
thinking
I really want to, but I was nervous about not being able to clear my ears. So.
Yes, I think you'd be able to do it. You know, one way you can test out my theory is to just go to a tall building and go up and down the elevators that go up to the 40th floor. And you just have to find a tall building to do it. So,
okay, sounds great.
So good luck to you. Try both of those. See what works.
I will. Thank you very much.
We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413. So before we take our next call, Zorba, what's this about self-reported unprofessional conduct among, of all people, medical students.
Well, medical students are perfect, right? They're perfect. They're all altruistic. They're all honest because they're our future doctors. And, you know, that's the image, right? The medical student being like the perfect person.
Well, that was certainly the way you were.
That's exactly right. Well, I was pretty good. I was altruistic, but I had long hair. And I still remember when I went to medical school, I was head of our medical school council. I mean, right away, I became head of our class. Mm-hmm. And I had some interactions with the head of the medical school, and he didn't like that my unprofessional dress, and he walked out of the meeting. And it was quite interesting.
So is that the kind of thing we're talking about?
Not at all. We're not talking about dress. We're talking about things beneath the surface that are important. So they looked at burnout, and what they found was burnout was essentially related to unprofessional conduct. So let's talk about that. The kids who were burned out from medical school were the kids who were less professional. And they looked at professionalism as honesty, integrity, acting with integrity, advocating for the needs of the patient, reducing the barriers to patient care, an ethical code of conduct. And this particular study, they looked at about 4,000 medical students, did surveys, about 2,500 answered the surveys, and they looked at, you know, what were your relationships with other doctors, what were your attitudes towards society, did you feel burned out? They had a whole series of questionnaires. Now, they found a few things. First of all, they found out there's very little cheating among medical students. In other words, it's very remote. Compared to college students and graduate students, dishonesty in terms of cheating, less than 10%. Extremely, extremely low.
Well, that's good.
But unprofessional conduct in terms of patient care was basically among those who were burned out up to 43%, you know, 43% engaged in some sort of unprofessional conduct, be it from stating that they did part of a physical examination that was normal when they never looked at that part of the body. Hmm. In other words, they stated that. Or they were more likely to talk about the patient in a disparaging way, in an unprofessional way. Hmm. And they didn't have a view, the ones who were burned out, about their responsibility to society. I mean, physicians have a responsibility to society.
Right.
It's not the same as starting a grocery store or a drugstore or, you know, some sort of a website. It's a different level of if you will, interaction with society than normal things.
Burnouts. My guess is that this has always been the case. If you're burned out, you tend to do these same sorts of things.
Well, the real question here is not do you do these things. The question, it's a chicken and egg thing. Are you engaging in these activities, and is that why you're burned out versus you're in an altruistic mew and you're not burned out? See what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, you're looking at it one way, and either way may be right. I'm burned out, so I'm going to engage in these activities. What difference does it make?
Yeah.
Whereas the other view, I think, is equally valid. I'm not really thinking of the patient. I'm not patient-centered. I'm me-centered.
And that burns me out.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because medical school is really tough. If you look at it, a full load in college, for instance, is 16 hours. A really busy load is 18 hours.
Yeah.
Medical school is the equivalent of 26 to 28 hours of work. That's what it is based on how many hours in college. Well, if you're not thinking of the patient, why go through it? You know?
Right.
And I say, if you're interested in money, don't go into medicine, become a lawyer. Now, keep in mind, my daughter's pre-law. It was a funny comment. I made it to her and she left the room.
I was going to say, now you've got lawyers.
And smokers and lawyers. Yeah. That's it. No, some of my best friends are lawyers, so I don't mean that seriously. I don't want the lawyers calling up and suing me for that comment.
800-462-7413. It's toll free. 1-800-462-7413. Here's a listener now, Zorba in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello. How are you doing today?
Fine. What's up?
Well, I've had this for a while, and my wife talks about it. But at night when we're laying in bed, she says that my body is just like it's on fire.
Hmm.
It's just got an excessive amount of heat coming out of it.
Hmm.
And, you know, I've gotten where I can recognize when it's doing it. But, you know, I still feel cold. You know, what I think, I'm cold. But she's saying that, you know, she's surprised that I still have the covers on me.
Uh-huh. Now, do you think it's because you're passionately hot for your wife, and that's why you've got that heat going on, hot and bothered?
That's what I tell her.
And let me tell you, that is the right thing to say to your wife of many years. Well, there's some interesting things in terms of heat regulation, how we perceive it, and what's actually going on. If you look at infants, they have no ability to regulate their heat. So when newborns are born, the most important thing you can do is dry them off with a blanket and keep them warm with a blanket or close to mom, because that's a very important issue. It takes a couple of days to a couple of weeks before little babies or infants are able to regulate your heat. And then if you look at the other end with senior citizens, and I'm medical director of a nursing home. I've been medical director of this nursing home for 3 decades. I walk into the nursing home during the summer, fall, winter, and spring, and they're all dressed in sweaters. Sweaters often in long underwear. So they're sitting there, and the staff is sweating because it's 75 degrees, and they're still cold, essentially with these sweaters on. And part of the theory of that is that it's the regulation of the blood that goes to our skin. That is part of the theory. So when blood goes to your skin, you then start to produce heat. And when blood goes away from your skin, which you often do as you're older, you constrict, you don't produce heat. Now, here's the problem. If you get too hot, you produce heat, you begin to sweat, you then get cold from the sweat. And so that may be what's happening. You get under the covers, you're just more warm-blooded, and some people run hot and some run cold. That's the reality of it. You know, you touch people, some have cold hands, some have warm hands. That's the reality. But then you start to get warm and you start to sweat, and that's what then makes you cold. And that's essentially what's going on. My wife runs hot, and I tend to run cold when I'm there. So I have an extra blanket in the bed with wool. And every night she says the same thing. Gosh, how can you stand that extra wool blanket? I am so hot. And I go, honey, that's because you're so hot. I love you. And then I go in my blanket, and she goes in her blanket, and we live together, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
that's essentially what you do. So there's nothing wrong with you. That's the main thing. There's nothing hormonally wrong. It's just the way your body runs and hers, and enjoy the next 30 years of your marriage.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for the call. That number again, 800-462-7413.
You know, it's interesting because when you look at the conjugal bed, the marriage bed, it's really interesting because people, when they're younger, they don't notice often these differences. But as they get older, they tend to notice them. And the big thing often is not heat and blankets, which you can take care of. Mm-hmm. Some people, for instance, do it with an electric blanket. And the other, if you notice, if you go to the store.
You can get them so that you can do half and half.
Exactly. Yeah. Because some people like it hot, some like it cold. And in the upper Midwest, electric blankets are common. I'm sure they're not common in Florida. But the real issue with marriage aren't the blankets. It's the noise. It's the snoring. When you've got one snorer and the other person not snoring, that's the issue, because the snorer is asleep and the other person is awake.
Exactly.
That's the problem.
Yeah, we've gotten a bunch of calls on that.
Yes, we have. The snorers of the world, the ones who are listening, are the ones who tend to call us.
The snorers and the snorees.
The snorees. The year got it, the snorees.
800-462-7413. Chippewa Falls, Wisconsin with us now. Hello.
Hi, Dr. Zorba.
How can we help?
Well, for about, several weeks here, my heel has been hurting. And it seems to get better at times. And it seems to actually get totally relieved. And then before I know it, it starts hurting a lot again. I have a whole collection of soles, inserts.
A whole collection of soles.
A whole collection.
It's such an interesting phrase. I have a whole collection of soles.
But none of them are working. None of them are relieving the pain.
So they're all bad soles, not good.
Oh, they're bad soles. How far are we going to run this joke, Tom? So getting back to the sole that we're talking about, what kind of shoes do you wear? You wear high heels?
Not real high.
What's not real high?
maybe one half to about one half inch or
one,
flat.
One half is okay. I've had women call the show who say, I don't wear high heels. I only wear 2.5 inches.
Yeah.
And so, you know, with a platform. So that's okay. Half inch is perfectly fine. Next question, barefoot. How often do you walk barefoot around your house?
Quite a bit.
Zero. That's what you have to do. That's number one. You are making a mistake by walking barefoot. You are now the croc lady. I don't mean that you you know, the Croc lady, that you're related to Crocs. Crocs are awesome. I own no stock in the company, but they are great. And Croc-like, you know, Croc-like shoes are great because they have very bouncy shoes. You should not walk barefoot except when you're in the shower and you have to walk barefoot, because one of the things you're doing is you're irritating either the bursa at the bottom of the heel. The bursa is a flat pad, or you have plantar fasciitis, which means that the whole arch is swollen. And one of the best ways to keep it swollen is to walk barefoot.
That's okay.
Number one. So no barefoot for you for a long time. Now, I have a lot of patients who never walk barefoot again. I'm one of those patients. I gave myself my own advice, and I actually follow it. And I used to walk barefoot. I never walked barefoot around my house because I had what you had once for a month, and I'll tell you how to get rid of it. But I stopped walking barefoot. Big issue.
Now the shoes. That's good to know.
Oh, huge! The shoes you have when you walk around the house should not be silly Kmart house slippers that have a thin cardboard at the bottom of it that basically are doing nothing for your feet at all. They must have a bouncy arch. So you could have a Crocs, you could have a Birkenstock, you could have a Teva, something like that. But you've got to have something that has a reasonable amount of rubber in there, or whatever they use in the bottom of it. I don't know if it's rubber, that actually pushes, gives you some comfort. Number two, we will put this on our website, zorbapastor.org. We will give you information on how to tape your foot. And taping your foot and your heel is dynamite. Dynamite. You go to a sporting goods store. You can get 4 for $10 of the tape that you use. You can also go to Walgreens or CVS or Target or anywhere else and get strapping tape. But the sporting goods stores, they're always cheaper. I don't know why, but they're just cheaper. You buy this. It's white tape. And you tape your foot. And if you keep it taped for about 2 to 4 weeks, it will get rid of a lot of your pain. And basically, you can shower with the tape. You have to change the tape after 3 days because it tends to be a bit odorous. But you can leave it on for 2 to 3 days at a time, and the tape is wonderful. And it works much better than a heel cup. And then the third thing is make sure you're wearing comfortable, sensible shoes. And as a woman, you know what I mean by comfortable, sensible, what my wife calls old lady shoes, but comfortable, sensible shoes. Okay?
I can do that.
No barefoot for you. You are now the Croc lady.
All right. Okay. That's great. Thank you so much.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And Zorba, let's nestle over to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox now and see if we can help out one of our listeners who may or may not be a Rastafarian, given that the email is signed Just a Facts, Mon. The facts they are looking for concern bed bugs. Writing, I saw a scientist on TV feeding bed bugs his own blood by letting them bite his arm.
Disgusting.
Could the bed bugs be eradicated by starving them to death?
Well, first of all, not being an authority on bed bugs, I do know a few things about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I always paid attention to my grandmother, sleep tight, don't let the bed bugs bite.
Sure.
And they were a big, big common problem back, and they went away. The 1920s, 1930s, 1940s, and 50s, they eventually disappeared.
DDT had a lot to do with it.
You bet. Yeah. DDT got rid of it. It was a miracle thing, and too bad it killed the birds because it got rid of the insects.
Right.
And it got rid of malaria, but it also got rid of the birds, so we don't use it. But the issue with bed bugs are this. If you put the clothing or the sheets in the dryer for, I think it's 20 minutes, and a dryer is typically high enough heat, you'll get rid of the bed bugs. But they stay there for a while. I don't know how long it is. You'll have to Google that, and I'm not going to give you the amount of time for gestation that they say. But the eggs are there for a significant amount of time. And so if you have enough of an infestation or any infestation, you have to get rid of it. And so my recommendation is if you find bed bugs and you look and you see it, that you take the sheets and you clean the sheets and that you call an exterminator and find out how to treat them.
Yeah, it's really tough to get rid of them.
It's a tough issue. I don't know if you remember, but in college when I used to get used mattresses, and I don't know, did you ever use mattresses?
What
of
do you
course.
Mean, use mattresses?
Well, you'd get a mattress like at, you know, St. Vinny's or Goodwill or somewhere else, or you'd get it on the, you know, you'd see one on the, I guess you didn't do it.
No.
You see one on the street. The first thing I would do, I remember.
You just pick up a mattress and.
Well, I didn't have a mattress. I remember I'd be on the street in front of somebody's house, some other student, and I'd say, here's the mattress. It always had sign of a ridge in the middle of it. Well, it's not. Let's not go into that. Obviously, I'm not ringing true, and I'm certainly not ringing true for the producers, anyone, either the engineer or the producer in there. But I would take the mattress, and the first thing I remember doing was I would take this insecticide that was powder and powder it in the mattress and put it inside and bang it, and then I would sleep on the mattress. And I remember the smell, and you know what it was? I think it was DDT. It got rid of everything. The mattress was great, yeah. And it had this nice sort of scientific
smell.
This
is not your recommendation.
No, I don't recommend that at all. I'm just telling you the good old days, back in the day.
If your biting lifestyle question is not allowing you to sleep tight, let us help. Just send your question to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org. And don't think I'm saying bring back DDT, because I'm not.
Good recipe coming up, a great dessert recipe coming up.
Good.
More of your questions, too, some more interesting research to talk over. And, of course, our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. More of your questions coming up after our recipe at 800-462-7413. But right now, not Tom's mom's crispy apple crumble.
Not Tom's mom's. You know, when you talk about your mother, I don't usually think of good food, because your mother, like my mother, was not a good cook.
Oh,
so
but
this
she
was
could
her...
do apple crisp.
Really?
She could do apple crisp.
Oh, really? Isn't that interesting? Yeah. That was her signature dish, was apple crisp. Because I can just see you're smiling right now like a little kid.
Oh, yeah.
You've got that Cheshire Cat smile on your face thinking about your mom.
Anyway, let's do this inferior version.
Inferior version? I know that. Now, apples. We got to talk about apples first.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if you know about apples, but Johnny Appleseed was a real person. He was a nurseryman, if you would. He went around the country, basically went around the country at that time, which was Pennsylvania, the Ohio River Valley, spreading apples. And apples are not spread by seeds. He didn't spread them by seeds. They're spread by cuttings. So he made apple orchards all over, and he died a wealthy man. He was a little bit strange and stuff.
From being a really nice person by spreading
apples. Now that's because we associate apples with good health.
Yeah, you know, right.
An apple a day keeps the doctor away. Well, that slogan originated in 1890 because the Women's Christian Temperance Union, they were basically the ones who were for the dries.
Yeah,
they were getting rid of alcohol.
Right.
We're going to apple orchards and chopping them down. Chopping down what we call a precious, delicious fruit that's healthy.
Why chop an apple tree?
Because apples were used for one thing almost always when you were out in the country, and that was making hard cider.
Go away.
Johnny Appleseed gave the gift of alcohol to the frontiers people. It wasn't the gift of good health. Apples weren't thought of as health. They were thought of basically just like grapes are thought of for wine. They were for hard cider.
Wow.
And so the slogan about the apple orchards they made up was, an apple a day keeps the doctor away, and that's how we think
In order to market the apples.
And to get these, you know, loony women from chopping down their orchards. They go to an orchard with an axe, and you see a bunch of women in those long coats and bloomers chopping down apple trees. Can you picture it?
Let's do the
recipe. Go to YouTube. You can probably find it there. Yeah. Okay, crispy apple crumble. Start out with 2.5 cups of old-fashioned oats.
2.5 cups of old-fashioned
oats.
That's right.
Old-fashioned.
Yeah.
1.5 cups of packed brown sugar. You're going to divide that up. Okay.
A cup and a half of packed brown sugar divided.
That's now, I've heard, I'm not sure if it's true, that Splenda, which is a sugar substitute made of sugar that doesn't have calories, now has 1 in brown sugar. I haven't seen it yet. That's what I've heard. So either it's there or it's coming to the market. But right now, we're going to use regular stuff.
Okay.
Cup of whole wheat flour.
1 cup whole wheat flour.
So that's our health. You know, it is a dessert. But we want to try to make it healthier if we can, but it is a dessert.
So how do we make it healthier?
Well, whole wheat flour will add a little fiber to it.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Now, I now believe in what Michael Pollan believes, who wrote The Omnivore's Dilemma in Defense of Food, that eat foods that you like in smaller amounts because they'll be satisfying. Mm-hmm. And the more I think about what's going on with America with obesity, the more I realize that when we got away from fat and went towards carbs and away from fat, we became fatter and fatter and fatter and bigger and bigger. And I think Michael Pollan is correct. It's because a lot of the food we eat is unsatisfying. So the thing about this recipe is it's satisfying. Just eat it in smaller amounts.
Yeah.
One stick of unsalted butter. I'm moving away from margarine with a lot of recipes. I think butter is great in small amounts.
Mm-hmm. One stick unsalted butter.
Chilled and cut into 1/2-inch cubes.
Okay.
Okay. 5 large Granny Smith apples peeled, cored, and cut into 8 slices each.
5 large Granny Smith apples peeled, cored, cut into 8 slices. And for this recipe, you don't want to use those delicious apples that I was championing.
Yeah, that's right. I don't think you want to. I mean, a delicious apple, if you like the taste of it, is best to be eaten directly. But in terms of making something like this, you want something that's tart.
Exactly.
And tangy.
Exactly,
yeah. And by the way, you know, an easy way to do this is to get one of those apple cutters. You know, you still have to take the skin off, but you know those little things that you push on there, they've got like 8 slices and you just push it down and it cores
right away.
I didn't
even know there was such a thing.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a little round thing.
Yeah.
We'll show a picture on our website, zorbapastor.org.
Okay.
If you've never seen one of these, they're hand things and you just push it right down, it cores it and they fall into slices.
Oh.
They're dynamite. We'll put it on our website.
Okay.
Okay, 3 tablespoonfuls of fresh lemon juice.
3 big tea fresh lemon juice.
Fresh is best, beyond a doubt, but if not, frozen is the next best.
Got it.
And Minute Maid makes a great one. I would not go to real lemon, which is reconstituted. Doesn't taste as
right.
good. 1 1/4 tablespoonfuls of ground cinnamon.
1 1/4 big tea ground cinnamon.
When you buy cinnamon for a dish such as this, get a small bottle that's mm-hmm. cheap and open it up and because it tends to lose its freshness. It's mm-hmm. okay on toast. I think cinnamon is great on toast, but if you do cinnamon in a pie and you want it to really be aromatic, it ought to be fresh. And there is a difference between cheap generic cinnamon and good cinnamon.
Mm-hmm.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
1/2 teaspoon of nutmeg.
1/2 tea nutmeg.
Best way to get your nutmeg is in a nutmeg. It's a nut, which is called nutmeg, and you get a little scraper like a zester and you just scrape it off and the whole room will smell like nutmeg.
Mm-hmm.
Don't use ground stuff.
Got it.
And 1/2 teaspoon of ground cloves.
1/2 tea ground cloves.
And if you don't like the smell of cloves because you associate it with turkey or ham rather, you can leave it out.
I can just smell this as we're talking.
Isn't
about it?
Yeah. Can't you smell it?
Smell it.
Obviously, it's
hot,
familiar.
Nice
to us. Oh, it's really good. Okay, mix the oats, 1 cup of sugar and flour in a bowl. And after that is mixed together,
mm-hmm.
add the butter cubes and rub them into moist clumps. That's mm-hmm. why the butter is chilled and cut into 1/2 each cubes. Then cover and chill. Okay, so you're going to put it in the refrigerator. Preheat the oven to 375 degrees. If you don't have a thermometer in your oven, buy one because
mm-hmm.
most ovens are off by 50 degrees, and most baked recipes, when they're off, are because you're not baking them at the right recipe. So spend $5 or $10 and get a good one. Spray the glass cooking baking dish with nonstick spray, and then in a separate bowl, combine the apples, lemon juice, cinnamon, and nutmeg. Then combine the cloves with the remaining brown sugar. Transfer to the baking dish and sprinkle with the oat sugar mixture. Okay, sprinkle with the oat mixture sugar mixture. Then bake for 45 minutes or until the topping is brown and crisp. Cool briefly. And then serve warm in bowls.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say cool briefly, that's because you won't be able to wait, but wait 10 minutes briefly. And then dig in because this is a delicious dynamite recipe. Now, it's 400 calories. So, you know, it's a significant amount of calories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got 12 servings out of this 400 calories, but they're 400 delicious calories. And so what you do in your meal plan is you leave some space to have something really tasty like this. It's not a dish for every night, but it's a wonderful dish.
Yeah, it sounds great. If only there was some way I could get this recipe.
Oh, I bet if you go to zorbapastor.org, I bet if you go there, you will be able to get this recipe. You will be able to get many of our other fine recipes that are on file there. And not only that, but you'll be able to sign up for our weekly podcast. That's zorbapastor.org.
Our toll-free number. And Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener now in Madison Lake, Minnesota. Hi.
Hi.
How can we
Thanks
help?
Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, we appreciate it. How can we help you?
Well, I was listening to your show about
carpal tunnel syndrome, and I was wondering if it would relate at all to what I have, which is called trigger finger.
How does trigger finger affect you? What is it?
Well, I didn't even know it was trigger finger, but I would wake up in the morning and I couldn't uncurl my right hand fingers, particularly my index finger. It would just be stuck in a bent position, and then it would snap, you know, once I tried to straighten it. And it just kind of continued until I went to my doctor, and he said, well, you have trigger finger, and put me on some naproxen and said, you know, try this, and you might even have to have surgery someday. And I thought, you know, I didn't even know that such a thing existed. So just wondering about what you thought about treating it and the possibility of surgery, or if there's anything I can do in my life to make it less bothersome.
And this didn't happen from some injury? You just woke up in the morning and there it was?
Yeah, kind of. It was really weird. I thought that I was sleeping wrong because I sometimes will put my hand under my chin. At least I think I do when I'm sleeping. And I'll wake up and then try to straighten my fingers, and more it got to be hard to do.
Well,
and it's only on my right hand.
Right, right. Usually is in one spot or the other. Well, first of all, it's not like carpal tunnel syndrome. Carpal tunnel syndrome is that we have carpal bones, which are a number of little bones in our wrist. And when the carpal bones are tight and pushing onto the nerve then becomes dysfunctional. And that's basically what carpal tunnel syndrome is. It's really a nerve that is tight. And then when you have surgery for carpal tunnel, it opens up the carpal tunnel so the nerve can breathe. The nerve doesn't really breathe. It just has some space, and usually that's enough to do it. Trigger finger is a problem in tendons. And they're the tendons in the palm. They're not the tendons in the trigger in the finger itself. They're in the palm. When you open up your finger, if you put your hand on your palm and you open your finger like Tom is doing, back and forth, you can feel, go ahead, Tom, just like you're doing, you can feel the tendon moving back and forth in the palm. And that's the problem, is that it becomes inflamed.
Okay.
The treatment is an injection into that point. Through the through the base of the finger, not through the palm. You go through the base of the finger. Is this your third finger?
Middle finger? I was going to say it's my trigger finger. It's my index finger.
It's usually the index finger or the middle finger. And what you do is you have to go to somebody who injects that. They inject it with a steroid. And the steroid sometimes cures it for years. Sometimes it doesn't cure it for years. Sometimes you need it a repeated injection. Some people get an injection every year or two. And then if the injections begin to fail, then it's surgery. But the injections are very, very successful. And I say that not only a doctor, but as a patient, because about 4 years ago, I developed trigger finger. Oh. And I woke up one morning and it was the same thing. I said, gee, did I sleep funny? And, you know, what is this? And then I recognized it after about a day or two. I realized I had trigger finger. And I go to my local injector. I go to a doctor who I think does wonderful injections. And once a year, once every year and a half, it irritates me. And I get an injection. It goes away. And that's what I do.
Awesome.
Yeah, they're really good. You want to go to somebody who injects trigger fingers, who knows what they're doing, because you want somebody who injects it the right way. It is uncomfortable, but then the trigger goes away. Yeah. So it's well worth it.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate your help.
We thank you so much for the call. Actually, I wasn't looking for trigger finger. I was doing this, Zorba, something you can't do.
Yeah.
Watch my fingers.
Yeah.
Can you do this?
No, I can't. How do you do that?
What I'm doing is moving the tips of my index fingers.
Without moving the other joint.
At the first joint.
Oh, I can't do that.
I'm
how do you do that?
I'm locking the second joint down.
I can't do that. How do you do
I know
that?
You can't.
How
I'm
do
the
that?
Only one in the world who can do that. Try it. Try it out there.
I can't do it.
Hold your finger straight and move just the top of the finger.
Yeah. Oh, I'm looking out at the audience. Nobody is doing it. Nobody is doing it in our audience. I can't see anyone doing it.
Anyway, before
not even the guys behind the control screen.
Before we break, Sarva, let's see if we can help out another listener who is wind-burned in Wisconsin. Our listener, Dawn, suffers from severe windburn. With colder weather on its way, she knows her skin is going to get irritated. She has tried sunscreen, but she's anxious to know if you are aware of any other remedies to help blow this problem away.
Uh-huh. So I wonder how long she's had it. Hard to say.
Yeah.
Well, windburn, the real issue is protecting yourself as much as you can before the wind actually, hits your face.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of it. So that means using some sort of an emollient cream on your face during the times that you're out in the wind. Things with aloe in it are great. Things some people like skin aesthetically or moisturizer aesthetically that is tackier.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like ones that are more lotion-like, but I would recommend going immediately to a moisturizing cream. Here's a very good example where I would recommend going to a naturopath because naturopaths are very good at looking at things like this and recommending something that you can put on your skin that will be worthwhile. Now, there are not a lot of naturopaths around where I live. In some areas, there are more. But an esthetician, that's a cosmetologist, somebody who's gone,
esthetician,
who's gone to cosmetic schools also, and they're often, they often will, sometimes they'll set up a practice, can also look at creams that you can put on your skin. But you want to protect your skin before it occurs. That's the way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Once it happens, over-the-counter hydrocortisone cream may help get rid of it, or if that doesn't work, a slightly more powerful cream that you might be able to get from your doc.
Okay. Well, send your lifestyle question into the wind by emailing the show at
Zorba@WPR.org.
Now, you might want to talk with Zorba. Ask him a question. Here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. More of your calls coming up, along with some more really interesting information and, of course, our medical myth buster here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. And what's this, Zorba, about kids with food allergies being targets of bullies?
Yeah, can you picture this? I mean, picture this. You've got a peanut allergy. Now, let's look at allergies. Now, there's food intolerances where people can't tolerate certain foods, but food allergies are serious. You can die of it. There was an article in the Journal of the AMA about 2 years ago about a person who practically died. They were in the emergency room, and the ER doc had came up to see them, and he just finished eating a peanut butter sandwich, and all he did was smell of the peanuts. So those particles were in the air, and the person who came in to be seen went into anaphylactic shock.
My goodness.
From the smell, because this person was highly allergic to peanuts just from the smell, because the smell of peanuts on somebody's breath means that there are particles of that in the air. So
what does that have to do with bullies?
You're a kid, you're in school. This was the article about a fifth grader who is at the peanut-free table in the lunchroom. So, because peanut allergies are so common, so this was like the allergy table.
That makes sense.
And bullies came over, and they were waving granola bars or peanut butter sandwiches. Hi, guys. Look at you nerds. Here's the peanut butter sandwiches. I mean, and it was bullying type behavior, just as I'm going to push you down in the playground and hurt you. And it turns out this is not an uncommon issue. Children are bullied not just because of the way they look, if they look funny or act funny, or if they had obsessive compulsive behavior, or if they have Tourette's disease and do repetitive behaviors of sorts, but if they have allergies,
peanut allergies. This happened. Why? I can't believe this is a common.
Well, bullying is still common.
I mean, that's kind of bullying.
Well, that's very interesting because this kind of bullying can be life and death or serious injury. And the reality is some of these schools are not taking this seriously. They're saying, well, he was just teasing that child.
Boys will be boys.
Yeah. That garbage stuff, boys will be boys.
That's
And this
awful.
Kid can take, yes, it turns out that that's awful in this particular case. So there are a lot of issues here. There are issues that have to do with how you identify a child child who may be at risk without having that child declare it to the rest of the school. That's one of the issues. In other words, if a child is on insulin, the rest of the school may not know that, so a bully can come over and take their insulin, for instance, and so on, or their needles if they have it. But this is a very serious issue.
And in addition to just the overall bullying issues, which schools really do need to get a handle on.
Absolutely. And I think this is important for a child who suffers. So I've got some recommendations. First of all, if your child has allergies, clearly you have to tend to them to make sure that when they're eating school lunch that things are taken care of. But I think you also have to question them. And you have to say, is anyone bullying you and bringing over peanuts or eating peanuts in front of you? And if that's the case, the parent should call the school and insist that it's addressed.
1-800-462-7413, our toll-free number. And Zorba, a listener with us now in Tallahassee, Florida. Hello.
Hi.
How can we help?
I was calling because I am 27, and I've had a case of the night sweats for a couple months now.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously it couldn't be related to menopause or anything, and I've been checked out by my regular physician as well as a thyroid specialist. And nothing has been detected. I've had every test in the book that I know I've checked. And so she's referred me on to a hematologist. So my question is if there's some kind of rock that I'm not unturning to try to figure out the cause of the night sweat.
Well, it's quite interesting because recently I did a search on nocturnal sweating because I have an older patient who's in their 70s and 80s who started having night sweats. So I just read about it probably no more than a week ago and went through basically the total differential diagnosis of night sweats. So first of all, night sweats turn out not to be uncommon. They're actually a common thing. A number of infections that I'm sure your doctor looked at, tuberculosis can cause it, other types of infections. Certain parasites, cancer can cause it. So they have to sort of look at all of the other issues that are there. And then the bottom line from the article was that about 30 to 40% of the night sweats we have no answer to. So I don't know if a hematologist is the right thing versus an endocrinologist, but I'd probably follow your doctor. And after that, if they don't find anything, because there are some hematological problems, I would probably label it as idiopathic. Now, what do we do about it is the issue. There is a drug that is used for women and men who have urinary incontinence problems. That's one treatment called Detrol, D-E-T-R-O-L. And it's Detrol LA is a long-acting compound that you take once a day. And basically, its side effect can be a bit of a dry mouth for some people, but the side effect is a decrease of sweating. It turns out it works very well for people with night sweats, either in the low dose 2 milligrams or the high dose 4 milligrams. So that's something you could try just to see if it works. Because if it bothers you, let's say, you're in a situation and you don't want to sweat, some people will take it. I give Detrol to people who sweat when they're eating sometimes. They have gustatory sweating. And what happens is they sweat when they eat and it doesn't bother them except when they're at a business dinner. They don't want to sweat because then they appear to be nervous. So they'll take this drug Detrol and they don't sweat. The other medical treatment is one of the side effects of low-dose tricyclic antidepressants, old-fashioned antidepressants, is a decrease in sweating. And they come in, nortriptyline is the drug I use. They come in 10-milligram capsules, and it's either 1, 2, or 3. And that will often cut out sweating. It can often be just a once. You take it at bedtime. 10 milligrams, that's a cheaper drug than the Detrol, and it has a different side effect profile. But 10 milligrams at bedtime, and that may work for it. And nocturnal sweating comes and goes. Sometimes people are bothered for years, and then it disappears, and we have no explanation for it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Sure,
good
we
luck.
Appreciate
good
the
luck.
Call. Thank you. Time once again now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's myth deals with the weightlifting world. It's long been thought that if you want to bulk up your body, you should lift heavier weights, and if you want to tone up your body, that you should lift lighter weights more times. Is this theory being busted?
Yes, this theory is being busted. It is not true scientifically. Now let's put the trainers aside who say that it really works for a minute, and let's see if there's any science behind it. Well, turns out there isn't much science behind it. There are a couple of studies that looked at this. There was a study of about over 100 women who were followed for 6 years and basically found that those who did resistance-type training with larger weights that basically caused them to sweat 85% of their maximal ability for about 8 reps versus 45% of their maximal ability for 15 reps, basically had less body fat and lost more weight. That was one study. Now, that's not a lot of studies. Only 122 women, didn't look at men.
Okay.
The other studies that have been out generally all looked at at women versus men. But there is no study that looks scientifically and says one has been proven to be the case, another one has not, that more reps will tone you up and fewer reps with a heavier weight won't do the same thing. It'll bulk you up. Turns out you bulk up if you eat more calories and you eat more protein. That's what's important with bulking up. And you lift heavier weights. And as far as toning your body, it still appears that the higher weights are more likely to do it, and basically reducing your caloric intake at that time after you're at the weight you want to be
at. I think this is interesting. You and I both started working out a little bit a while back.
Toning up, Tom. Yep. Toning up.
And I just moved from one place to another.
Yes.
And got a physical fitness guy showing me the
different
the
person. Machine,
different person. Yeah. And I'd never done any leg stuff other than crunches and thrusts. Well, he showed me two leg machines and had me do them. And he said, this one machine was is better for getting your legs in shape. And this other machine is better for vanity. Which one do you want?
For vanity.
And I said, give me the vanity machine, please.
Now we know why Tom is going to the gym.
I can't wear shorts. Maybe I'll be able to. If you have a myth weighing you down and need us to bust it, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
Our number is 800-462-7413. And Zorba, our next listener is in Zion, Illinois. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
Well, I am 46, and my mom had very bad rheumatoid arthritis, which I became really familiar with. And in the last month or so, I have developed some pain in my thumbs, stiffness in my hands. Like, you know, even just for a week, it was so bad I couldn't stir anything, I couldn't pick anything up, and now it's eased off, but it's still there. And so I'm just assuming that's what it is. And I didn't go to a doctor because I just know it's really hard to diagnose. And so I just wonder if you know of anything like lifestyle changes that would help, slow down the progress of this.
Let's talk a bit about rheumatoid arthritis, first of all. Rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune disease. Sometimes it's difficult to diagnose, and sometimes it's more straightforward. There's no blood test that says, yes, you have it, no, you don't have it. It's a clinical syndrome. In other words, you have to look at what your symptoms are, physically what the physician observes and sees, then what the blood tests show, and then make an evaluation of whether or not you have it. There are a newer set of drugs called biological, and when I say newer, I mean they've been around for about 10 years, and they actually slow the progression of the disease. They definitely affect the disease. They affect the progression of the disease. For some people, they work really, really well. They're a major step forward in the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. Back in the day, if you would, years ago, we had very little treatment. We had anti-inflammatory drugs, non-steroidals, and they would work so-so. And then we would have the occasional burst of steroid. Great when it worked, but of course, problem and side effects from steroids. But the new biologicals that they called, including Imuran, can make a significant difference. So before I give you how you might be able to help it, I do recommend that if you wonder if you have rheumatoid arthritis, there is something you can do. So you may want to go and see a rheumatologist. And you really need somebody who is specialized in the field to make the diagnosis here. What does fish oil do? Well, fish oil is kind of plus minus. It's been used for osteoarthritis. Some people say it's worthwhile and it works just like glucosamine and chondroitin sulfate. Some people say it doesn't do very much at all. If you're going to pick fish oil, I recommend a house brand. Walmart, CVS, Walgreens, Target, they'll stand behind it. It'll really have enough fish oil in it with omega-3 fatty acids. But if it's a non-name brand or a house brand, I never know what's in it. because it's not regulated like a drug. Mm-hmm. So if you want to try fish oil, I would do that. Anti-inflammatories, over-the-counter, I'll leave 2 tablets twice a day. Dynamite drug works really well for some people. And regular exercise, very important, hand exercises. I have a patient of mine with RA, rheumatoid arthritis, is not in anything. She has paraffin baths. She does her fingers, her hands once or twice a day in paraffin baths. She loves it. She said it's so soothing, warm wax on her hands. She dips it in a couple of times a day, morning and evening, and she finds that very, very worthwhile. Acupuncture may help with the pain and discomfort. Looking at the energy systems, acupuncture can make a difference. Going to a naturopath and looking at different lotions that you can put on your hands, sometimes counter irritants will help, such as capsaicin cream, can make a big difference. So that's what I would do. But I think I'd get a diagnosis. Have you gone to a rheumatologist?
No, not about this, no.
Are you afraid to get the diagnosis?
No, you know, it's just that I remember that hearing from my mom and from this other joint person I went to for an unrelated thing a few years ago that it would just be really hard to diagnose and that the blood test isn't even all that accurate. So.
Well, the blood test is not the only thing that diagnoses it. It's not hard to diagnose. It's that for some people, the diagnosis is questionable. In other words, for some, it's like they have the major and minor criteria, they've got rheumatoid arthritis. For others, they have none of the criteria, they don't have rheumatoid arthritis. And then there's a bit of the gray zone. And so you might fit into that gray zone or not, but sometimes even going to a rheumatologist and they go, well, you don't have rheumatoid arthritis, that's great. Because then you can sit back and say, I don't have it. Mm-hmm. I can deal with it. You don't have to have that fear in your mind or that thought, I wonder if I have it. Because frankly, if you have it, you want to know about it because you want to know whether or not the biologicals are going to be worthwhile for you. So I really recommend that. And I think you got some advice that was more of a naysayer advice. Well, it's hard to diagnose and we can't do much. And I'm not in that camp. I think having a diagnosis, even if I don't have it, is worthwhile because it gives you peace of mind.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much.
We appreciate the call. Thank you. And finally, Zorba, it wouldn't be another hour without a citation from the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police. This fine comes from Deputy Janice, and you're not the only one guilty of it.
Oh, great!
Apparently, though, the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police would like to make an example out of you. Janice writes, do not end a question with a proposition. I think she means preposition.
She does mean preposition.
A proposition.
Did she write proposition?
A proposition would be like, hey, I really like your looks. Can I buy you a drink? A preposition as in, how long have you been taking that medication for? Just say, how long have you been taking that medication? Or, for how long have you been taking that medication? Zorba, you're not alone in this mistake. It seems that many people these days put four at the end of a question. What happened to grammar lessons in school?
I don't know.
Miss
Some people
Shooty.
Are Miss Shooty, exactly. Exactly. You hit it right on the head. And frankly, some people are for grammar and some people are against grammar.
Well, can we end the show with a preposition? If you want to join the Zorba Pastor on Your Health Grammar Police, you can do so by signing up for the Academy when you email the show at
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg, the Mutt and Jeff of WPR, are in charge of this hour. Adam Friedrich is our executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidra.
I love Munchin. I love the comic.
I'm not old enough to remember. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1016Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.